first of all, an introductory. Why are we having this, what is termed a philosophical seminar? Well, why not? Let us discuss topics of Shastra, what is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead for our edification and uplift. In fact, we shouldn't discuss anything else. There's one quote from Srila Prabhupada in which he said that we should constantly be discussing philosophy. And he himself was the exemplar of this. Srila Prabhupada was always discussing philosophy. Of course, there would be, sometimes he would discuss what we might call practical matters. He would also sometimes tell jokes and stories, but that was also for displaying or demonstrating philosophical points. It wasn't that Prabhupada just told jokes just for entertainment or stories just for entertainment. It was all didactic. If you don't understand these words, look it up in the dictionary. So in this philosophical seminar, as it is termed, we plan to go a little more deeply, or much more deeply, or whatever. Not, maybe or may not be. Let's just see how it all comes out. But generally in our classes, in our temples, the level of discussion is quite basic, because there are always newcomers, and if it's more than basic, they won't understand. The idea for this philosophical seminar came at the Shravan Kirtan camp we had in Erkod in which month? October, was it?
May.
It was like, felt like October because of the Erkod climate. So last May, in which I was answering some questions given by Savyasachi Prabhu, based on his readings of one of the books, largely based on his reading of a translation of a book by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And about an hour into the answer, and I was really just beginning, because it's such a big arena of topics within that one area. There was a whole arena of topics. So everyone's invited to turn their cell phone off. Everyone, please take out your cell phone and turn it off. Don't worry about silent mode, just turn it off, please. So about an hour into that presentation, I noticed that the expression on the faces of most of the attendees was blankness, of non-understanding. Like they didn't understand. It was clear. So then I stopped answering, and at that moment, a eureka moment, I had the understanding that we should have a separate seminar. Actually, there was some, what happened was the. Then I asked I said, okay, let's stop this discussion because devotees don't understand. But then there were a few devotees who said, no, this is where we want this. This we really want this. So there are a few devotees who had studied Prabhupada's books for many years and who were appreciating that presentation. But for most of the devotees were, they couldn't follow it. There's some issues about Vanashram Dharma as it affects Vaishnavas. So most of the devotees, they couldn't follow it, but a few much appreciated it. So I thought, well, we shouldn't discuss this with everyone because they'll just be bewildered. They may get the idea of discussing Shastric topics is to help people understand more deeply, to come closer to Krishna. But they may simply become confused. So it may have the opposite effect. But on the other hand, there are some who their understanding will be nourished more. So I thought for them in particular, we should have a seminar where we're able to discuss in more depth. So that was the original idea. And I also had, apart from that, I'd already had an idea that we should sometimes have seminars in which some specific philosophical topics are dealt with. So we're combining these two concepts in this seminar. The philosophical topics which will be dealt with that Vidvan Gauranga Prabhu has kindly come from Mayapur, and he will take up the subject or the closely related subjects of Veda Purushayatva, you can say it as one word, and also of Astikya, which are closely related subjects. Maybe we'll get a little bit into the hermeneutics and epistemology also. Maybe, but to discuss that, I really require a smaller group. There was some condition originally that should be devotees attending this seminar, those who read all of Prabhupada's books. Actually, to read them all of Prabhupada's books once, that's a beginning, I guess. It doesn't mean that you're up there on the level of Ramanujacharya. It's a beginning. It should be a basic for everyone who is accepting Brahminical initiation, especially if they're doing so to be teachers or preachers. Brahmin initiation can be accepted for cooks and pujaris also. But as it happens, we have a more mixed crowd. So, and another reason for this seminar is my own personal proclivity. I like to consider the topics of Shastra. As Srila Prabhupada said, we should discuss the topics of Krishna consciousness. He several times said this from different angles of vision. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, discussing about Srimad Bhagavatam, that Krishna Bhibhu Bhagavat, Krishna Sama Bhagavat, Krishna Tula Bhagavat, Bhibhu Sarvashroy, Prati Shloke, Prati Akhare, Nana Artha Koi. He said that Srimad Bhagavatam is comparable to Krishna inasmuch as being Vibhu, powerful, glorious, and Sarvashray, can give shelter to all. And in every verse and every syllable there are various meanings. So the topics of Shastra can be discussed from various angles, and Srila Prabhupada wanted us to do that. Not, that means we're not going to accept a Mayavadi angle or Smartha angle. We may discuss that, but we're not going to accept it. We may discuss it for the sake of showing its lacking, but we're not going to accept that. So, yeah, I like to do this. Different devotees have different proclivities in devotional service. It was Shukadev who spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit. He had a strong proclivity for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Prahlad, by remembering, and this we find in the nine processes of devotional service. They have their exemplars described, plus one, Ambarish Maharaj, he did them all. And we find within our ISKCON also that different devotees have different leanings or preferences within devotional service. So I personally like to consider and discuss topics of Shastra, going deeper, considering the various points. So those who like, they can also attend this seminar. That doing so, that may bring out various doubts. When we consider the topics of Shastra, various doubts may arise. How is it like this? How is it like that? How could it be like this? But if there's an underlying commitment of faith, then by Krishna's grace all those doubts can be resolved. There are different kind of doubts. Krishna says that, Sangshayatma vinashyati. One whose very atma is composed of doubt, who's a doubtful Thomas, to use a biblical expression, who's sangshayatma, his whole being is one of doubtfulness, vinashyati. By that, he's already destroyed. But there may be various doubts that arise even among those who are shraddhavan. Shraddhavan jan hoy bhakti adhikari. Uttam madham kanishta shraddha anushari. The very qualification for entering bhakti is to have a basic faith. And what is that? What is that faith? Is our Well, Shastra and the Acharyas, they define everything very clearly. Nothing is vague like these Mayavadis. So the one other good purpose of philosophical seminar is to train us to kick the Mayavadis in the face with boots, as was one of Srila Prabhupada's favorite activities. And all the Vaishnava Acharyas. That's a qualification of a Vaishnava Acharya. All the Vaishnava Acharyas, their acharyatva, or their status as an acharya, that's one essential qualification, is their total hatred of and disgust at and commitment to combat the Mayavad. So, Shraddha Vanjan Hoi, those who have faith in Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Shraddha Shabde Vishas Kare Sudrida Nishchoy Krishna Bhakti Koile Sarva Kama Krita Hoy. The basic faith that if we simply serve Krishna, then everything is effected by doing so. There's no need to do anything else. One should not do anything else. Everything is complete and perfect in service to Krishna. So that basic faith should be there. But even then, doubts may arise. But this kind of doubt is not the kind of doubt that destroys bhakti. But it's just an inability to reconcile various points, not with the idea that, well, you see, then it must be all wrong, but the doubt that arises, that means that I don't understand, that means there's something defective in my understanding. There's different kind of doubt. Just like Arjuna, when he heard Krishna tell him, Krishna told Arjuna that, I spoke this to Vivasva, Nidang Vivasvate Yogam Proktava Anaham Avyayam. And then Arjuna, he could have just rejected Krishna and said, come on, this is all, what are you talking all this nonsense for? How is it possible? You're just the same age as me, and you're saying that you spoke to Vivasvan, and then Vivasvan Manave Prabhu, Vivasvan spoke to Manu, and that could only be possible many millions of years ago. So, I can't accept this. Arjuna could have said, because it was totally beyond his, at that moment, Arjuna taking the position of a conditioned soul, it was beyond his ability to conceive that how could Krishna, who's the same age as Arjuna, speak to Vivasvan. Of course, Vivasvan's still there, but then Vivasvan spoke to Manu, Manu spoke to Ikshvaku, and Ikshvaku was already a long time passed away, so Krishna must have spoken a long time ago. So then Arjuna, katame tan vijani antvam ado proktavaniti. How can I understand this? He didn't say that, well, this is just all nonsense, but he's, how can I understand? It's a different expression of doubt than the doubt of rejection, or the doubt that he's not thinking that Krishna is wrong, he's just thinking he just can't understand it at all. But then he asks Krishna, and Krishna, of course, replies to him and gives him the proper understanding. So we'll find this throughout Parikshit. Narada, Parikshit asks Shukadev, that, well, the Supreme Lord, he should be equal to everyone. That would be a fault in him if he's supposed to be the Supreme, but then he's inclined to some rather than to others. So, Shukadev already answered. He already answered that, actually. And he chastises Parikshit. But anyway, he explains in more detail. Then we find that Narad has a doubt. He thought Brahma must be supreme. Brahma answers his doubt. So this questions arise in the minds of devotees. Even they may have a full faith, they may be very learned, they may be qualified themselves to teach others, but doubts may arise in their minds, and those doubts can be settled in various ways. One way is by consulting an authority, but sometimes the question may not be asked, or we may not, of course everything has been asked, but we may not have access to that answer. We may not have access to a devotee competent to answer that. Or by consulting Shastra, of course, is the greatest authority. And, or it may come by revelation also, that Krishna gives the understanding within the mind. Matasmriti jnanam apohanam cha. From Krishna comes understanding. So, yeah, the doubts, questions will arise. In the course of discussion, we can discuss various questions, doubts, take up some maybe subtle philosophical issues. Srila Prabhupada said there are two kinds of questions. One is for understanding Krishna, one is for avoiding Krishna. So both kinds of questions can be dealt with. They're dealt with in different ways, or even the same question may be dealt with differently according to the questioner, the attitude of the questioner, or the level of understanding, or the ability to understand of the questioner. It may be also differently answered by different persons according to their understanding, or according to their outlook in devotional service. For instance, one disciple of Radhana Swami recently asked me, he didn't come it seems, that Hari, what's his name? Harichandra, he didn't come. I asked him to come. He has some philosophical interest. So he told me that, he asked me that if everything is in Prabhupada's books, then why are other devotees, followers of Prabhupada, writing more books? So I told him, well, one reason is because Srila Prabhupada told his disciples and followers to write books. And that although everything we need to become fully Krishna conscious is in Srila Prabhupada's books, still, writing is a form of kirtan, it's glorification of Krishna, that should go on. And various topics within Srila Prabhupada's books, they can be dealt with in more detail, as he himself wanted. It's not that Srila Prabhupada is like Hazrat Muhammad, he's the last prophet, and then after that, finished. Although, in the Islamic tradition, there are so many explanations of Muhammad also. So it's not that he may be considered the last prophet, but he requires to be explained to other people. So it may be also not everyone understands everything in Prabhupada's book. So I gave various reasons why book writing should go on. And he told me that he'd asked his Guru Maharaj that question, and he gave an answer from a completely different perspective. He answered that it's just like Krishna's already been dressed very nicely, and then other people, they add some extra ornaments. So it's a different answer. The different people may answer differently. So with all this discussion, that should deepen our understanding, so we don't remain on a superficial level. I've seen sometimes devotees, even there have been devotees for some time, and then what happens, someone brings up some doubt and they become bewildered. That happened actually when in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. We find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was staying in Vrindavan, that's Imlitala, what's now called Imlitala, that was where he stayed. And a little distance from there is the place called Kaliahrad, the lake of Kaliya. So people were coming and saying that, oh, Krishna, at night, people can see him directly. He's dancing on the hoods of Kaliya in the lake. And they were saying to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you see, you're a great devotee of Krishna. You should come and see. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't want to go and see. And Balabhadra Bhattacharya, his servant, he became very anxious to go and see this incarnation of Krishna. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wouldn't let him go. And then some people came and they were discussing this, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said that there's no avatar or appearance of Krishna mentioned in Shastra for this time. And then some people said that, so there's no need to go and see him. But then these people, they said that, yeah, there's no need to go and see because You are Krishna. You see, you're a sannyasi, and therefore you're Krishna. They were right that he was Krishna, but for the wrong reason. It's the Mayavadi idea that dandagrahena matrena nara narayano bhavit. That simply by accepting a sannyas danda, a man becomes Narayana. So then in the middle of their discussion, someone else came and said that, well, they found out actually there's a fisherman at night. He goes there and he has some light for fishing, and seeing that the light and the reflection, and people mistook it somehow for Krishna, like that. So, what was the point I was making? That even devotees, they may have some philosophical understanding, but they can become after some years, or they appear to be quite philosophically astute, but they have serious misunderstandings because they haven't gone deeply. Hridayangam, there's a Sanskrit word. Hridayangam means to... what does it mean? It means to take it in. Chitete korea aikya. To make it one with your heart. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya, Chitete Kuriya Aikya. That there's that one becomes one with that knowledge. It's not that the knowledge of Shastra, there's me and there's the knowledge, and I'm thinking about it. But it becomes one's being. It's not that we see the knowledge in Shastra and then we apply our intelligence to understand it. We have our reasonable way of thinking that we picked up from the reasonable education that we had that taught us to be reasonable and scientific, and we apply that and then we understand that knowledge. But the way to understand Shastra is that we don't have a way of thinking with which we think about Shastra, but we think via Shastra, via Shastric knowledge. In other words, our mode of reference is not that, okay, let's examine it, let's think about it, and we'll apply our reasoning and our logic, but rather we think this Shastra Chakshuhu, seeing through the eye of Shastra, we see everything through the eyes that Krishna gives us. Is that the whole way of thinking is that which Krishna gives us. That is what we are aiming at. We have all started with a disadvantage of being raised in a way of thinking which is different, a whole different outlook. We've been all raised with the way of thinking that Ishvaroham aham bhogi, and from that expands so many different wrong ideas. All the philosophies in the world, they all come down to this point. Ishvaroham aham bhogi. They're all combinations, permutations, ramifications, extrapolations, and if you can think of any other words which fit also, of Ishvaroham aham bhogi. That's what it all comes down to. And Krishna gives us the understanding by which we can see things as they are. Jnanena tu tadajnanam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham adityavajnanam prakashyati tatparam. When we have the knowledge, when we have actual knowledge, then everything becomes illumined. Just like the sun, when the sun rises, then we can see everything clearly. Otherwise, if we bring a little flashlight, or no, flashlights like that, or a hanging lamp, we can look around and see a few things and think that we can see. But seeing in the dark is not seeing. That's not... So vision means to see through Shastra, through the tenets of Shastra, the way, or as Srila Prabhupada states, that Krishna consciousness means to see the universe as Krishna sees it. The vision that he gives us, the way of thinking that he gives us. Do you understand the difference? It's not that there's the knowledge in Shastra and we apply our intelligence to try to understand that, but rather our intelligence works according to that framework. That's why we see that Srila Prabhupada, he was never bewildered by so many different philosophical ideas. And from the beginning, when they told Srila Prabhupada that now they're going to go to the moon, Prabhupada never had any thought that they could possibly actually be doing that. It was just impossible. It's like saying now I'm going to turn into a tree. And that might be more possible. A yogi could go to the moon also. But by taking a spacecraft, it's the Shastric example, is that of taking a dog's tail and holding onto a dog's tail to cross the ocean. You see, a dog jumps in a little water and he's doggy paddle. He swims like this. And you think, okay, good, let me take the dog to the ocean, throw him in the ocean, I'll hold on to the tail, and we'll cross the ocean, taking shelter of a dog's tail. It's not possible. It's an absurd proposition. So Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't at all bewildered. He was quite convinced, and many people thought that he was too convinced. You shouldn't be so convinced. There's something wrong with being so convinced, because, you know, you have to think of other people's opinions. You have to know that actually, you know, you might be wrong. It's like there was one reporter in San Francisco asked Prabhupada, it's very funny, you can see that conversation. He asked Prabhupada that, well, what if they, Prabhupada was before they went to the moon. Prabhupada said, no, they're not going to go to the moon. He said, no, the reporter said, well, it's all set up. They're planning to go to the moon. They already sent a rocket or whatever it is. And now they're going to send humans to the moon. And Prabhupada said, no, they're not. They're not going to be able to do it. And the reporter said that, well, what will happen if they do go? Then how is that going to affect the faith of your students? Prabhupada said, well, they're not going to go. So there's no question of it affecting the faith of my students. And the reporter, he couldn't get what Prabhupada was saying. He's saying, but, you know, actually they are going to go. And why don't you consider that, you know, it's going to have a serious effect on the faith of your students? Prabhupada said, no, they're not going to go, so they won't have any effect on my students. And the reporter just couldn't get it. And maybe they thought, well, you know, he's a quaint old man, nice old man. He's a sadhu, you know, sadhus and old men. You can indulge them a little bit. But Prabhupada, he didn't take shelter of being an old man and being a sadhu. But he spoke the message of Krishna. And there was no doubt in his mind that he was correct. In Mauritius, Srila Prabhupada had a program. He was invited to go there by the Prime Minister. So the Prime Minister arranged for all big people in Mauritius, the big fish in a small pond, to come and listen to Srila Prabhupada. One of the people was the British ambassador to Mauritius. What's the population of Mauritius? It's less than Baroda City. But anyway, at the end of Srila Prabhupada's talk, the ambassador said to Prabhupada, well, you sound very convinced. Doesn't any doubt come in your mind? And Prabhupada said, yes, therefore people are saying, thank you very much, Prabhupada said. Yes, he was pointing out as a fault, the ambassador was trying to point out that you sound convinced, don't you think there could be any doubt, how can you think that you're completely correct? But Prabhupada took it as a compliment. But yes, you've understood the point, therefore people are taking it. So tesham aditya vajjanam prakashayati tatparam. The promise is that we can see everything clearly. Now, then you may say, well, how is there any doubt? There may be some doubt, but there may be minor doubts. It's just like in the daylight, you can also see from a distance a mountain, and it has some haze over it. So you may doubt, what is that? Is it some, maybe it's a cloud, low cloud? And then if you come closer, then you can see that, oh, actually it's smoke, so there must be a fire. So you're seeing, but everything may not be completely clear. But basically one can see everything. One can see there is a mountain, whereas in the night, if you arrive at a place by vehicle, you might even see there's a mountain, but then you wake up and you see in the morning that there's a mountain. You're completely unaware of the literally massive fact that there's a big mountain there. It's a huge thing, but you can't see it at all. And then you may have to go closer to see the details of what's there. But the basic fact that a mountain is there, that becomes clear when the sun rises. Otherwise, without that, one may not know at all. Seeing in the darkness is not seeing, as Prabhupada said. So, another point of discussing in more detail, and I say more detail, well, maybe it may not be so much detail. But let's see how Krishna inspires us all. But we should discuss all these points. Bhagavad Gita. Do I have my Bhagavad Gita? See if my Bhagavad Gita is here. I didn't do my home. I didn't prepare well enough. Does anyone else have Bhagavad Gita here? Yeah, okay. Yeah, look in my edition. If it's there, yeah. So, one important point is to better appreciate. I think it's not there. No. Okay. Open it up on chapter 5, text 16. Is to better appreciate the glory of Krishna. As Srila Prabhupada often said, it is not enough to simply say that God is great, but we should understand how He is great. And how He is great, well, that's unlimited. Oh, that's Gyanena to Tadagyanam. Ah, yes. Okay, I'll go back to that point as I was just. This is, yes, Srila Prabhupada's purport to Gyanena to Tadagyanam, Yesham Nashitam Atmanaha. This is a kind of point, interesting point from this verse. In several places in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about, just like here, Nashitam Atmanaha. What is it? Trivedam Narakasyedam Dwaram. Next words? Nashitam Atmanaha. So same words. So several times in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about this Atma being destroyed. But then the first thing he discusses in Bhagavad Gita is that the Atma can never be destroyed. So, what are you going to do? Therefore, these points should be discussed. That means what we can understand from this, he becomes as if anatma. He doesn't know that he is Atma. The person who does not have this spiritual, this jnanena tutaragyanam, who does not have the knowledge by which ignorance is destroyed, he acts and thinks as if he's not Atma. He thinks, I am this body. One who's overcome by kam, krodha, and lobha, he doesn't know that he is the atma, or his atma gyan is destroyed. He is acting as if he's not atma. The atma is never destroyed, but his understand, or that he is atma, that fact has become it's temporarily. It's not completely destroyed forever, but he destroys his atmatva, or his being an atma, being atma, that is destroyed by ignorance. So like this, we'll find so many things in Bhagavad Gita. How is that destroyed? By kam, krodh, and lobh, these three destroy. And then again, we find in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says that kama, in his discussion at the end of the third chapter, that covers avritam jnanam etena. It covers one's knowledge. So in this way, the kama covers one's knowledge, so that one thinks of oneself or forgets what he is. So like this, we'll find all the topics of Bhagavad Gita. It's a huge ocean, Bhagavad Gita. It's the Sarva Upanishado Gava, all the knowledge of the Upanishads, plus more. What's not explicit in the Upanishads is explicit in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna puts it very clearly, brings it all together, the spiritual knowledge of the Vedas, puts it all together, makes it all very clear. So, anyway, I wanted to read the purport to this verse. Those who have forgotten Krishna must certainly be bewildered, but those who are in Krishna consciousness are not bewildered at all. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvam Jnana Plavena, Jnanagni Sarva Karmani, Anahi Jnana, Jnanena Sadrisham. Knowledge is always highly esteemed. And what is that knowledge? Perfect knowledge is achieved when one surrenders unto Krishna, as is said in the 7th chapter, 19th verse, Bahunam Janmanamante, Jnanavan Maam Pripadyate. After passing through many, many births, when one perfect in knowledge surrenders unto Krishna, or when one attains Krishna consciousness, then everything is revealed to him as everything is revealed by the sun in the daytime. The living entity is bewildered in so many ways. For instance, when he unceremoniously thinks himself God. It's very nicely put here. He actually falls into the last snare of nescience. If a living entity is God, then how can he become bewildered by nescience? Does God become bewildered by nescience? If so, then nescience, or Satan, interesting, because elsewhere Prabhupada said there's no such being as Satan. Actually, in Indian languages, the word shaitan is used in a different sense to which the Christians use it. Christians, Muslims, I guess the Jews also. Yeah. Yeah, they also have a concept of Satan, right? They identify the talking snake in Eden with Satan. Although it just says in Genesis, it just says a snake. But they say that must have been Satan. Anyway, I mean, there are so many things to discuss. Nescience, or Satan, is greater than God. You see, it says right there in Prabhupada's books, Satan is greater than God. Right? Says right here. So we should all become Satanists. Is it? Let's read the whole sentence. If so, then nescience, or Satan, is greater than God. Well, maybe someone would accept that and say, yeah, there are people. There are Satanist people who worship Satan. And they say that, yeah, Satan's more powerful than God. You see, he's in control of this world. God's lost control. Satan's on top, so better worship Satan. That's what they say, and they literally worship Satan. Yeah, they have their whole church. They have their religious rites. They have their religious rites and everything. And it's by pratyaksha, it makes sense, right? Who's in control here? Satan is God's. He lost it a long time ago. So like that. Anyway, I'll try and finish the purport, because any line, any word, you can just go off into a whole universe of discussion. Real knowledge can be obtained from a person who is in perfect Krishna consciousness. This is beautiful. I mean, it's just one line, and then, you know, all mental speculation is finished if we just accept that. And, well, maybe, but this, have to reconsider that, and Sanshayatma Vinashati. This is perfect. Simple, straightforward, clear. Real knowledge can be obtained from a person who is in perfect Krishna consciousness. Nice, very good. Therefore, one has to seek out such a bona fide spiritual master and under him learn what Krishna consciousness is, for Krishna consciousness will certainly drive away all nescience as the sun drives away darkness. Even though a person may be in full knowledge that he is not this body but transcendental to the body, he still may not be able to discriminate between the soul and the supersoul. Elsewhere in the third chapter, Srila Prabhupada describes it. Jnana means knowledge of the soul. To understand the soul is different from the body. And vijnana means to understand the soul is different from Bhagavan. So there may be people who know they have spiritual knowledge, but they don't. Still, they're so much bewildered. Even though they know that they're not the body. Aham Brahmasmi. Still much, because they don't know the nature of the soul. And that can be understood when one has Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangasya Pajayati. The Bhagavat Tattva, not simply Atma Tattva, but Purna Atma Tattva means there has to be Bhagavat Tattva, Vijnana, which then one becomes free from material attachments. So, however, he can know everything well if he cares to take shelter of the perfect, bona fide, Krishna conscious spiritual master. Very good. I shouldn't say very good. Everything's very good, but if he cares to take shelter, it's if you can understand the subtleties of English. Then if you care to take shelter, so it's almost a sarcastic statement. If you care to take shelter, if you just care to, because it gives the idea of someone who's, you would say that to someone who's very puffed up. Well, if you would just care to do this. As if for them to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master is almost like a condescending act. Which, of course, one cannot do in a condescending way. You cannot take shelter condescendingly. But if they're thinking that I am God, how are you going to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master? Your idea is that you yourself are the shelter of everything. So how are you going to take shelter of a guru? It's not possible. Therefore, the Mayavadi's so-called acceptance of a guru is ridiculous and farcical. One can know God and one's relationship with God only when one actually meets a representative of God. A representative of God never claims that he is God, although he is paid all the respect ordinarily paid to God because he has knowledge of God. One has to learn the distinction between God and the living entity. Lord Sri Krishna therefore stated in the second chapter that every living being is individual and that the Lord also is individual. They were all individuals in the past. They are individuals at present. And they will continue to be individuals in the future, even after liberation. At night, we see everything as one in the darkness. But in day, when the sun is up, we see everything in its real identity. Identity with individuality in spiritual life is real knowledge. That statement, at night we see everything as one in the darkness. The word one could be read in two ways. It means, at night we see everything as one, meaning one person. I am in darkness. But it could also mean that we see everything as one because everything is just black. So it could be read either reading is suitable. So identity with spirit. Can you make a note of that? Make a note of that point. There's some other point I wanted to make a point of. Make a note of that point. So going back to another reason for this discussing in more detail and having philosophical discussion of Krishna. Well, actually, there are many reasons. One reason is because it pleases Krishna. That's a good reason, isn't it? It's part of bhakti to recite Shastra and to recite the glories of Krishna. To recite Shastra and to discuss it, that pleases Krishna. And one's appreciation of Krishna will increase by doing so. Now, I said that the discussions in our temples, the lectures, they're often quite simple. That may be superficially simple. But just like the statements of Srila Prabhupada, they sound very simple and basic. But every time you go through, you find more and more depth. There's a whole world. The universe in a grain of sand. This William Blake, the English mystic, had some realization. So he said, to see the universe in a grain of sand, and to see the world in a grain of sand, and I can't remember exactly, it's a good quote, and eternity in a moment. So like this, it's like his Brahman realization. Or to see that there's so, in something so small, from analyzing a grain of sand, and you can appreciate the whole universe from this. Or that there is a whole universe in just understanding the grain of sand. And interestingly, scientists have discovered that a grain of sand, which at the time of William Blake might have seemed to be just a small object, which they wouldn't even think of analyzing it even further at that time. But by scientific analysis, they found the crystal formation, and then how does it form a crystal and different kinetic energies at work, and so it becomes a whole big subject, a grain of sand, to see a universe in a grain of sand. So it's not that speaking simply is wrong or neophyte or but by discussing in more detail, we can appreciate the glory of Krishna more. Krishna is unlimited. His glories are unlimited. We are very small. Our ability to appreciate Krishna is very small. We could appreciate Krishna better if there weren't cobwebs in the room, because that gives the influence of tamogun. So, after this session, Gauradas is going to lead the charge against Tamagun, right? Maha cleanup of this hall area, which is being reserved for the diorama exhibition planned here, an exhibition of Tamagun. So to save money, they're just letting it fill up with cobwebs so they don't have to make a diorama. But we don't agree with that. So the fight against Tamagun will start immediately after this lecture, cleaning out all the cobwebs very carefully nurtured for the last many, many months. So Krishna's glories, they're unlimited, and our ability to understand them is limited. Even Krishna can't understand his own glories. Therefore he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to try to appreciate a little bit. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, in compiling the most exalted shastra by which the highest manifestation of reality, theology beyond theology, God understanding God beyond his godness, he has compiled that. But he says, I'm just writing like a puppet. I don't really understand what's going on here. Or I'm like a bird who's taking a beak from a great ocean. I'm writing it. I don't know how I'm writing it. It's beyond me, but what's going on here? Even one moment of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, you couldn't describe even an antashesh with all his hoods, in all his existence. He couldn't even describe one moment. And yet Krishnadas Kaviraj says, I'm trying to describe so many different leelas. So Krishna's glories are unlimited. And we can try for our own purification to enter into that more deeply. There are so many reasons to glorify our acharyas who have presented the glories of Krishna. They have found the glories of Krishna. Vyasadeva has presented in Srimad Bhagavatam the glories of Krishna, especially in Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Shukadev, he gave the same Bhagavatam, but with more realization. And all the acharyas, they find more and more glorification of Krishna. So, and how to understand Shastra, I'll come to that a little later. That's by the mercy of the acharyas. So to glorify them, what they have given us. Yesterday we didn't sing that song. Nitai kinamene chere. What name has Nitai brought? What are these amazing holy name? Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna Prasad, everything about Krishna. We'll find Chaitanya Charitamrita. We'll find this word chitra is used again and again to describe the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They're astonishing, simply astonishing. So we can glorify them, and to glorify our Gauriya Siddhanta. So many people believe so many things, but we accept, everyone thinks that what we believe is right. But how to establish that in opposition to so many people who think it's wrong? Actually, all over, even though our movement is going on all over the world for so many years, but hardly anyone thinks of our devotees as being philosophers. That's bad, isn't it? That's something wrong. Because Srila Prabhupada, he was very clearly a philosopher. He was speaking philosophy literally day and night. He wrote so many books. He trained his disciples in philosophy. We discuss philosophy regularly in our temples. But people think that we are At best, they think we're harmless monks. People think just the opposite. They think that we're sentimentalists. So, we are the greatest philosophers. Anyone who understands Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they're the greatest philosophers. And if they can establish that in opposition to the bogus ideas of the world, every other idea except that is bogus. Except when Mother Yashoda thinks it's different. When Mother Yashoda doesn't think Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, she's not bogus. But when some university professor thinks that, he's bogus, or anyone else. So that's a problem. That's a major problem in the world, that people are influenced by all these bogus ideas, and they think that, you know, what is this? Even the so-called favorable professors, they think that we're following some ancient mumbo jumbo that has no relevance to the modern world, and they think, okay, it's nice they're doing that, you know, everyone has the right to believe what they think. So, you know, some cultural nice. But if you get down to what they actually think, they don't have any faith in Krishna or that in Shastra or any such thing. So we can glorify our Gaurya Siddhanta. Among ourselves we can do that. But there are so many points we have to reply to. And not just among ourselves, but we should be ready to fight. Fight all the owls. Kill all the owls. Otherwise the owls will kill us. If we don't kill them, they'll kill us. Just like Ashvatthama. The battle was over. Who was left alive? Duryodhana, Ashvatthama, Kripa, Kritavarma. And all the Kaurava forces were finished. And still there were many Pandavas alive. Ashvatthama had gone to hide in the forest. And he saw some owl descend on some sleeping animals and just destroy them. He got the idea. Okay, and he went to the Pandava camp when they were all sleeping and slaughtered them all. And only the Pandavas, original Pandavas, remained. And Yuyutsu, he also remained, the son of Duryodhana. One son of Duryodhana who Bhima didn't kill. So, if we don't kill the owls, in one place Prabhupada said, our movement is meant to fight with all these owls. They look like... the owl looks very wise as he sits on the tree. But his aim is to find some mouse and kill it. So if we become a mouse, then we'll be killed by the owls. So we have to become strong to fight. And understand this. To discuss in depth, that may not be suitable for everyone. Some people may be bewildered, but for some it is helpful, required. Otherwise they may... people have intellect... Krishna has given people intellectual proclivities, which if they're not satisfied within the realm of Acharya Upasanam, then they may go off and satisfy them elsewhere. Just like we find some devotees, Prabhupada disciples, who it seems they prefer to associate with mundane professors than with devotees, because they think that their intellectual need, which is less than the need of the soul, but it is a need also, just like The indriyani purani ahur indriyebhyo parang manaha manasastu parabuddhi yobuddhi paratastu saha. Those who are not fully fixed in the platform of Atma, or even those who are, they have sensual needs, mental needs, emotional needs, intellectual needs. So if they're not satisfied on the platform of Atma, then, or Adhyatmic platform, then they may try to find satisfaction wherever it's available. And they like to discuss with different professors, and they can't find that level of intellectuality, intellectualism, within our society. So that should be provided, that we can discuss these points. Of course, we're not interested in mundane intellectualism. But there are, we see our acharyas, those who were great acharyas, all of them, they were all great intellectuals. Now you may say that, but when we say intellectual, we don't mean this mundane intellectual, but we see Vyasadeva, he's an intellectual. Definitely not a university professor type. And then Madhva, Ramanuja, they're all Prabhupada, an intellectual. He was always talking, he was concerned with thoughts, concepts, how they affect us in the world, how to apply them. This is the discussions of intellectuals. Now we may say Gorki Chaudas Babaji Maharaj wasn't an intellectual, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the greatest intellectual, he said that that all the conclusions of the Shastra are contained in a grain of dust at his lotus feet. What Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in his own estimation, which we may accept as his humility, what he didn't understand, he got from Gorki Chaudas Babaji Maharaj. Therefore his picture is on the altar with the acharyas. You may say, well, what did he do? What did he... Bhaktivinoda, we can say, he did this, wrote this book, Namhata, so many things. And what did Gorki Chaudas Babaji Maharaj do? He had one disciple. And that disciple is Bhaktisiddhanta. So, everything Bhaktisiddhanta he got from Gorki Chaudas Babaji Maharaj. And we see how our acharyas, they took pleasure in that also. That intellect, just like mundane intellectuals take pleasure in talking nonsense intellectualism, but our acharyas, they took pleasure in poetry, describing the glories of Lord in poetry. But there's a difference. There are mundane poets, they also take pleasure in the alliteration, the punning, and all the different facets of poetry. And devotees do also, but there's a great difference. There's, as is repeatedly pointed out in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his, what is that, Godruma Bhajana Upadesh, he says there's a great difference between mundane poetry and the poetry which glorifies Krishna. Because one is mundane, it's just glorification of words, or a movement of words, and it nourishes the mundane rasa, which operates outside the sphere of the Atma, on the covering of lust that covers the soul, and that rasa that's appreciated at that level, that's not the rasa that Rupa Goswami has analyzed in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That's simply some different phases of ahankar, emotions within ahankar. So, intellectual also, how the devotees, they establish in the realm of thought, transcendental thought, the glories of Krishna, the proper understanding of Krishna, and the language they do to do so. This English language is not suitable, actually, for discussing all these topics, because that in Salem recently I discussed that bhoga vilasa, that within one word there's so much packed in, which is not possible in English. That one sentence of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's writing, even one word, there's a whole universe of understanding packed in that one word, and it just doesn't happen in English. So we discuss in English, but it's a useless language actually. Prabhupada utilized it and purified it, but it's not suitable actually for discussing in, as our acharyas have discussed. There's so many things we're going to miss just because we have the wrong language. Now that doesn't mean we're going to miss Krishna, but we may miss so many subtle points of appreciating Krishna. So yeah, that ultimately that should be we should discuss in Sanskritam. So hopefully this will be we may have many such philosophical camps. This may be the first. And hopefully this may be a precursor to a Vaishnav University. Srila Prabhupada wanted a Vaishnav University. He wanted one at Kurukshetra. He wanted at Mayapur. We should have that. Our movement should not simply be building temples and holding aratis and that's it. Distributing food, which we hope someone has made some kind of an offering to Krishna, if they have any idea who Krishna is, because they never go to any class, and then collect money on the basis of doing so. I mean, Srila Prabhupada didn't come from the spiritual world just to open temples. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said this. I'm not a mason or a contractor that I came to build buildings. Build some building, sing a little song, collect some money, and be happy. Already there are enough temples. There are so many temples already. So, Srila Prabhupada had a much greater purpose than we can often even conceive of. We think, so you build so many temples. We'll also build some temples. Building temples, that's good. That should be done. But that simply building a building, or even worshipping Krishna formally, that doesn't comprise Prabhupada's mission. People should actually be Krishna conscious. This discussion is so that we should become Krishna conscious. We should actually be conscious of Krishna in everything. So there should be Vaishnav universities to establish the Vaishnav understanding as the ultimate. The Vaishnav understanding is our understanding. How much can we understand? What is our ability to understand? If, as Srila Prabhupada used to quote his father, Krishna has 10 hands, or God has 10 hands, and you only have 2. So if Krishna wants to take away from you, you cannot resist. Of course, even one of Krishna's hands is far more powerful than our 2 hands. And if Krishna wants to give you, how much can you take? How much can we understand? There's the proverb of trying to accommodate an elephant on a plate. Here's one plate, and now how can you put an elephant on? Even his 1 foot won't fit, and he's got 4, and they're spread out. So the elephant is understanding of Krishna, and the plate is our intelligence. We cannot accommodate Krishna within our intelligence, but Krishna, he can put an elephant on a plate, just like he can put an elephant through the eye of a needle. So Krishna can do anything. So we can understand Krishna to some extent. To some extent. It is possible by mercy, atapite deva padam bhujam dvayam prasadale shano grihita evahi janati tattvam bhagavan mahinno nachanya ekopi chiring vichandvam. That padam bhujam dvayam, by if one has even a slight trace of mercy from Krishna's lotus feet, then he can understand the glories of Krishna, not by any other means. So we're searching for that mercy. That mercy means who can get mercy? One who's puffed up cannot get mercy, because they don't want it. They think they're above. I don't need anyone to. I don't need anyone to help me. I already understand everything. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he rejected Vallabha Bhatta, who thought, well, I've got a better explanation than Sridhar Swami. Sridhar Swami, I'll explain the Bhagavatam by my own understanding. See, Sridhar Swami, he's inconsistent. He makes mistakes. I understand better. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't accept that. What's that? Prabhu kahe? Swami na manile, vesha madde gan gan, vesha bitare, what is that? Anyway, he said that who doesn't accept the Swami, which is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu punningly said, meaning Sridhar Swami, one who doesn't accept the Swami, their husband, is a prostitute. A wife who doesn't accept the husband is a prostitute, who doesn't accept the husband as their master. Did you find that? Vesha. You know that one very well, huh? What is it? Swami na manile. Isn't it Prabhu Kahe? It's one of those Prabhu Kahe. Swami na manile jejan. Vesha bitare taha ganam. Is it? Tahare ganam, something like that. He's counted among the Vaishyas. And someone was quoting that to me saying Vaishya. Vaishya, not Vaishya. So, our process is to accept the mercy coming down. It's completely different to the mundane scholars who think that now we're going to study, I'm going to get my degree, I'm going to become the expert, I'm going to understand everything about it. Yeah, I'm an expert on Krishna consciousness. I have a PhD in Gauriya Vaishnava Siddhanta. And I understand it very well. Actually, I'm a world authority. I can tell you very well. That's not our process. Our process is acharyopasanam. We study in a prayerful mood. We don't think, this should be told every day during these Bhakti Shastri courses, because people, they go to school and they have this whole idea, you study and you become the possessor of the knowledge. And then you have that knowledge. It is your attribute. It is your property. Now you know something, and you're going to use that knowledge to further your ends. And when people come to the Bhakti Shastri course, they should be told every day that we are here. What is our study? That we're simply praying for the mercy of the acharyas to, just like in Gayatri Mantra. The Gayatri Mantra is a glorification that our intelligence may be illumined by the knowledge, prakashyati tat param, by which we can see the Supreme. So this should be told every day in the course, because people have such a wrong idea that we've come here not to become the possessor of knowledge, but to become the servant of this knowledge, which is Krishna, the servant of the acharyas who are giving this knowledge. We are not the possessor, we are the servants of this knowledge. Without that understanding, you can have Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Sarvabhauma, all completely useless. Worse than useless, because you simply become puffed up. No, yeah, I know so much. And it's nonsense. Before anyone goes into a Bhakti Shastri class, they should have some time cleaning the toilets, washing the pots, all these things. That used to be our Bhakta program. Before the Bhakta program was conceived of, anyone who came, they would be, all right, you want to join our movement? All right, okay. Then you scrub all the pots, clean the floor, clean the toilets, do all this. Then we can understand. That's the best service for everyone, actually. Sitting on this chair is not the best service. The best service for anyone wants to make lots of advancement, just clean the toilets, clean the pots, do all these things. That's very good service for everyone. Of course, someone has to do other things also, but for personal spiritual advancement, it's very useful. Best. We find that this Narahari Chakravarti, he wrote this Bhakti Ratnaka in his old age, and all his life he was cooking for the deities. No high profile. Then he wrote such an important work. So, Acharyopasana, this is our process of understanding. Otherwise, Acharyavan Purusho Veda, one who has an Acharya, he knows what is Veda, what is knowledge. And this doesn't mean just sitting in some ceremony and your name is so and so Das, Jai, that's not Acharyavan. Acharyavan means Acharyang Mang Vijani Yan Navamanyeta Karhichit Namartya Bhudya Suryeta Sarvadeva Mayoga. Acharya means that Guru Mukha Padmavakya Chitete Kariya Aikya Arna Kariya Mane Asha. Such a person can know if they have this Sarvam Etad Ritang Manya Yang Mang Vadasi Keshava. Someone who accepts the Acharya in this way, the representative of Krishna, then they can understand by the mercy of Krishna, who is Sarvasya Chahang Hridi Sannivishto Matasmriti Jnanam Apohanam Cha. Krishna gives understanding. It's not that, I was born intelligent and I had a good education and therefore I can understand. No, I can't understand anything. If anyone thinks like that, then immediately you're disqualified from understanding anything of any importance. It's just that is the qualification to become filled up with all kinds of nonsense and go to hell, if anyone thinks like this. So Acharyavan, one who has the Achar, he can understand, and no one is not possible to understand by any other method. It's simply not possible. Otherwise, what are you going to say? How are you even going to go to the Vedas and the Vedic knowledge in the first place? Why should you go there? You go to the university or whatever. Why should we accept Vedic knowledge? And even you go to the Vedas. What are you going to understand from the Vedas? What are you going to understand from the Srimad Bhagavatam without someone to explain that? How are we going to understand anything about it? It's not possible. We'd be simply bewildered. For a start, we don't know Sanskrit. Prabhupada gave it to us in India. Even if we know Sanskrit, if we approach that simply with our own intelligence, what are we doing in this material world? We're being bewildered by kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsari. We take that to Srimad Bhagavatam. There's no way we can understand even the first the first word is om. That's the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam is right there in the first word. What are we going to understand? It's simply not possible. That's where we find these Western Indologists, the Max Muller and all these rascals. They came to it and they just found it's just completely inconsistent. All these nonsense. nonsense things like giants with 10 heads, and they just couldn't find anything of any value in it. Well, sometimes they thought there's some valuable things, but on the whole they just thought it's a hodgepodge of disparate ideas which have no actual value. Who is that who said that one page of any good European novel is worth more than all the Vedas all put together? Who is that who said that? One of those? One, some European, some Britisher. They're impossible. They cannot even. They studied it, they translated it, and they couldn't appreciate it at all. So unless one, Acharyavan, we usually translate that as one who has buddhiman, one who has intelligence, but it's not, see, it's a defect of the English language, it's a bit difficult. Acharyavan doesn't mean I have an acharya, just like I have a pet dog. Rather, the acharya, I have submitted myself to him. I become his. Atmasat, that word is there. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays. Koro more atmasat. So it means that one's being becomes merged, not in the way of the Mayavadis, but your being becomes part of the being, or your being is defined by, you are one with the Acharya, not one in the sense of being on the same level, but your whole being is dictated, your thought, your activity, that person is Acharyavan. It's not sitting down at a, just sitting in a ceremony and, oh, now I'm also initiated, okay, now they'll respect me more. It's not that. That's not what Acharyavan. Therefore, the training in the Gurukul is just one of total submission, that's all. Such a person is Acharyavan. In this regard, I'm reading from the introduction to chapter 1 of Adi Leela of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Srila Prabhupada writes, since we belong to this chain of disciplic succession from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this edition of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita will contain nothing newly manufactured by our tiny brains, but only remnants of food originally eaten by the Lord Himself. See, even you can all understand this, I hope, but otherwise, if people read, what do they mean? This edition is the remnants of food. It doesn't seem to make any sense. Well, one who knows the Vaishnav culture, they can understand what this means. This edition of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita will contain nothing newly manufactured by our tiny brains, but only remnants of food originally eaten by the Lord Himself. Yeah, because actually, as Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami says, I'm not writing this myself. Madan Gopal, the deity, is dictating to me. Or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is personally writing this. He says of Chaitanya Mangal, Vakta Sri Chaitanya. Actually, it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is speaking through Vrindavan Das, and again through Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not belong to the mundane plane of the three qualitative modes. That's why Edward Dimmock and company are completely, he made his whole, his lifetime work of translating Chaitanya Charitamrita all useless, completely useless, because he doesn't accept this. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not belong to the mundane plane of the three qualitative modes. He belongs to the transcendental plane beyond the reach of the imperfect sense perception of a living being. Even the most erudite mundane scholar cannot approach the transcendental plane unless he submits himself to transcendental sound with a receptive mood, for in that mood, only one can realize the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that's that point I was making about doubts. One may have doubts, but one is in a receptive to the transcendental sound. It's not that, whereas the doubts of someone who is not receptive to the transcendental sound, then that becomes more grounds for them to reject the transcendental sound, because they think the transcendental sound and an ordinary sound are the same. Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita, and Mao says in, what's that, the little red book? What's it called? Mao Zedong? The little red book or something. Hitler says in Mein Kampf, and Shakespeare says in The Merchant of Venice, and it's all different people's thoughts, right? You know, Krishna was a great philosopher, and we've also had David Hume from Scotland, and there was at least one British philosopher. He was Scottish, but anyway. Otherwise, they're mostly all Germans or French, but sad for the British. Anyway, we conquered the world. Those were the days. Anyway, there are so many philosophers, and you know, Krishna was also one of them, and Krishna said some really good things. Yeah, I really appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah, it's almost as good as Nietzsche. We might think like that, because we don't appreciate this transcendental sound, that this is coming from a different platform, completely different platform. What? This is great, this is really good here. It gets better. Well, I can't say it gets better because it's all transcendental, but prasad is all prasad, but some people like rasgullas more than chapatis. So it's all transcendental. But still, someone may have a taste for some things more than others. What will be described herein, therefore, has nothing to do with the experimental thoughts created by the speculative habits of inert minds. Nothing to do with the experimental thoughts created by the speculative habits of inert minds. The subject matter of this book is not a mental concoction, but a factual spiritual experience that one can realize only by accepting the line of disciplic succession described above. Srila Prabhupada writes his commentary, begins his commentary with writing the names of all the great acharyas in disciplic succession, offering obeisance to them. Any deviation from that line will bewilder the reader's understanding of the mystery of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is a transcendental literature meant for the postgraduate study of one who has realized all the Vedic literatures, such as the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra and their natural commentaries, such as Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. This edition of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is presented for the study of sincere scholars who are really seeking the absolute truth. It is not the arrogant scholarship of a mental speculator, but a sincere effort to serve the order of a superior authority whose service is the life and soul of this humble effort. It does not deviate even slightly from the revealed scriptures, and therefore anyone who follows in the disciplic line will be able to realize the essence of this book simply by the method of oral reception. It may seem like very basic stuff, but it is basic, and that's the basis. And if we don't have that basis, then we become off base. That's a baseball analogy. Off base. If you're off base and they throw the ball, you're out, is it? That's what happens in cricket. If they hit the wicket with the ball and you're not there, if your bat's not there, and your foot has to be there, one foot and the bat has to be within the crease. Otherwise, you're the same in baseball, I guess, is it? If you're not at the base and they throw the ball there, then you're what? They touch you with the ball. I see. So, yeah, if you don't have this basic knowledge, then you're off base. You're in a dangerous position. So we see that, you know, even big scholars who have been on base, they can get off base by forgetting these basic points. They lose it and they begin to talk all nonsense like mundane scholars. Because they forget that we have to receive. We are receiving knowledge in disciplic succession. Simple point, very simple. But as soon as you start to think, I'm a big scholar, I know so much. Actually, Prabhupada, he's not as good a Sanskrit scholar as me. He was good, but I can translate it in my own way, or I understand it in my own way. Useless. Become completely useless. So, simply by the method of oral reception. So, we are discussing here Acharya Upasana. Yeah, so Acharya Upasana means we discuss the matter given by the Acharyas for the sake of serving them, not for defying them. It's not that we're going to take it out and analyze it with our intelligence and find out what they said wrong and then get a PhD for analyzing everything that's wrong. No. Prabhupada said we should get a PhD from Ramananda Rai. That's real PhD. What he gave the highest understanding of Krishna consciousness. Which is not even all described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Some idea is given. That one has to enter into that. Some idea is given. As Prabhupada mentions in that purport, he says that in this matter, mundane university degrees are useless for studies. Prabhupada generously said useless. Worse than useless. So we're not to defy the Acharyas, because the only way we can understand to get enter into, see, you can read it, you can memorize hundreds of shlokas if one has the brain power to do so. But yasya deve para bhaktya yatha deve tatha guru tasyaite katitahi artha prakashante mahatmanah. The understanding, what Krishna is communicating to us through Shastra. Shastra means Krishna's communication. That communication only takes place. We only understand. That knowledge only manifests within our heart if we have firm faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, firm faith and bhakti, and in yasya deve para bhakti yatha deve tatha, and the same faith in Guru. So this is the methodology. There is a methodology. It's not simply sentiment. It's certainly there is methodology for understanding that. Sarvo, here's another part of the essential to the methodology. Sarvo pa divi nirmuktam tat parat vena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchate. This is the key to enter the realm of transcendental sound, that one has a service attitude. So as I've several times pointed out, as Srila Prabhupada is preaching all over the world, mostly to people who don't have faith in Shastra. But he would make these two points, particularly two points he would preach about, that corroborate the message of Shastra, and if people are ready to accept them, and Srila Prabhupada would present them in a systematic, logical manner, then the next stage is to accept the knowledge in Shastra about them. So the two points are that we are not the body, consciousness is separate from the body, and that we are controlled. Therefore, we should accept the existence of a controller. So, that controller is in a different... That knowledge of the controller is given by him in Shastra. And he gives us the eligibility. He bestows upon us the eligibility to understand it by the service attitude. This is the key. Sarvopadi vinir muktam. First of all, understand, we are not the body. We have nothing to do with these mundane designations. We are not Indian, non-Indian, Indian, Hindu, non-Hindu, Brahmin, non-Brahmin, educated, uneducated, rich, poor, fat, thin, diseased, healthy. None of these designations apply to the soul. Sarvopadi, vinir muktam, being completely free from them. Tatparat vena, one absorbed in the transcendental consciousness, free from all contaminations, and serving the master of the senses with the senses that are the natural attribute of the soul, with a mood of a desire to serve. So if we understand that we are controlled, we are inferior, we are under the control, then we are meant for serving that controller. And if we do so, he gives us the understanding by which we can serve him properly. Tesham satata yuktanang bhajatang priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. Krishna, if we want to serve Krishna, Krishna gives us the understanding by which we can serve him properly. And if we don't want to serve Krishna, then Krishna gives us another kind of understanding, which is suitable for not serving him. Krishna, he gives us what we want. He may not give it exactly the way that we think, but he gives us what we... If we want the intelligence to avoid Krishna, even if we're making a show of doing bhakti, we will get the intelligence to avoid Krishna. And if we want to serve Krishna, then Krishna will give us the intelligence by which we can do so. So, even if one is superficially a devotee, even if one is superficially very learned in Shastra, even if one is very superficially not only learned in Shastra but expert in understanding, if one does not have a service mode, then it's all meaningless. One hasn't actually understood. As Srila Prabhupada says, the test of one's chanting, the sign that one's actually getting the result of chanting Hare Krishna, is that he's enthusiastic to serve. So if one is not eager to serve, if one is not burning, his whole being is doesn't have the desire to serve Krishna. If he has some other, take it easy or do something else. Unless one is fully fixed on serving Krishna, which is the natural result of understanding Krishna, then so one's so-called knowledge, it's all meaningless. It's not actual understanding. So we will see someone who is eager to serve. They have understood. And even if someone doesn't study, he understands everything. The eagerness to serve is itself the full understanding. There are many instances of devotees who, even they're not very philosophical or not considered very philosophical, they can ask them. They may not tell you all the details and all the technical terms, but they have complete understanding of who we are, what we are doing, how we have to serve Krishna without any personal motive. So, yes, obvious verse to quote, Siddhanta balaya chitte nakaraha halash eha hoite Krishna lage sudhira manash. We should discuss what is the proper understanding, Siddhanta. We should not be lazy to do so. If we're lazy in the matter of understanding Krishna, if we don't try to understand how Krishna is, how God is great, how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we won't become strongly attached to Krishna. If we do so, we become strongly, our mind becomes strongly fixed in Krishna. And otherwise, if we don't, then Siddhanta alash jan anartha to charana. If we don't, if we're lazy in the matter of understanding Siddhanta, then we don't give up our anarthas. We might even have so much information. We're not studying to get information or knowledge, to become learned fools, filled up with so much information. But we're studying for purification. I'll continue this. This is supposed to be the introductory lecture, but the time for it is now finished. So I'll continue that in the evening. Hare Krishna.